Let's go, let's go, let's go. Tempo in and out of the huddle. I want to go odd. 5-51 mirror.
This is Patriots Playbook.
Go stack guts combat. Odd. 51 mirror.
Patriots Playbook. Breaking down last Sunday's game.
They're looking for man coverage in the zone. They didn't have anybody to throw to. Just stay outside on the 7 route.
Next Sunday's game.
Be ready for the grapes check, too, okay? Because we'll get the bunch on third and short. Even 51 grapes. Even 51 grapes.
And the rest of the NFL season.
Yeah, go ahead and hit it in there because the backers are going to fast read over the top.
And some of the fun stuff in between. Now, here's John Rook on Patriots Playbook.
Come on, let's go, let's go.
WTF Wednesday. Prediction Thursday. It's all in one, all encompassing today in the playbook. John Rook with you here. And tomorrow night, we've got football, the Thursday night game on NFL Network and on CBS right here from Foxborough and Gillette Stadium. So there won't be any show here tomorrow, at least in this particular time slot, as we'll be getting ready for the game and pregame social starting at 6 tomorrow night. So in that regard, we're combining the 2 days today into one, kind of like we did yesterday with Nitpick Tuesday. Today it's What's the Focus Wednesday and Prediction Thursday, which means to you it's very simple. You need to come up with your score predictions right now. Can you do that? I'll bet you can. 855-PATS-500. Toll free, 855-PATS-500. You can find me, of course, on email, webradio@patriots.com. Hit me up on Twitter, @JRBroadcaster is the Twitter handle, @JRBroadcaster. And then on Facebook, it's John.Rook, R-O-O-K-E. And then if you haven't submitted a friend request, and I think I answered about a half a dozen of them in the last day or so, which is great. Happy to do that. Submit a friend request if you haven't, and then you can post your scores or you can use the chat function during the shows, and we talk a little NFL, a little Patriots football, even on the air or off the air, depending on when it's convenient for you, because I actually get some friends from the UK and some from down under in Australia. Talk a little football when we're not on the air here because, frankly, they're probably snoozing about this time. So here we go. It's very simple. What are your thoughts on the game? Because of the fact that rain is likely to be a part of the process tomorrow, that does sort of, I hate to use this word, but it's the first thing that pops in my mind, so I'm going to say it. Kind of dumbs things down a little bit. That doesn't mean that it simplifies necessarily, but it I think indicates the need to be able to function properly with the basics. Make any sense to you at all? Running game has to be a factor. Short passing game, sure. I don't think you'll see a whole lot of down-the-field strikes, although we've seen that in the past from TB12. I don't know that that necessarily is going to be something that's going to help or hurt Geno Smith and the Jets tomorrow night. But I would tell you that based on what we've seen thus far this season, the Jets having lost 5 games in a row coming into this tomorrow, that throwing downfield is not something that you would consider a strength for this football team. It's clear that they're going to have to rely on the ground game, and they're going to do whatever they can to grind it out and keep the ball out of Patriots' offensive hands as best as they can, which means the Patriots, and we suggested this on yesterday's show, to me, almost an extension of what they performed and what they did this last week against Buffalo. They've got to stack up and stop the Jets' running game. It's that simple. I don't think you have to get fancy with this. You know, Rex Ryan has been noted in the past for his, you know, fancier defensive schemes, or maybe not so much fancy, but let's just say he has game planned well for specific opponents. And I think we can all recognize that that's something that Bill Belichick and the Patriots have done pretty well themselves in previous years. But as far as the Patriots are concerned for tomorrow, I don't think that they have to outthink themselves. Buffalo wanted to run the ball. The Patriots did a good job of stuffing it, for the most part. The Jets have to run the ball. And that should be the Patriots' primary focus. Make them one-dimensional. If the Jets are going to beat you tomorrow night, Geno's going to have to do it with his arm. Period. And if he can do it with his arm, kudos to him. But if he can, well, then he's going to have to do it against Darrell Revis and or Alphonso Dennard, and perhaps if Brandon Browner's activated tomorrow night, then you'd have to say advantage Patriots. So I'm just, you know, you don't have to overthink this thing. They're really, honestly, this is one of the few games I really didn't have to think much about game planning. I mean, if I were either of the coordinators, if I was Josh McDaniels, if I was Matt Patricia, if I was Bill Belichick, I mean, to me, this one just sort of screams right out at you. Stop the run. Keep things close to the vest. You know, if the weather dictates you need to get a little more conservative, well, then, you know, Brandon Bolden, for the most part, probably should get the majority of the looks in the backfield. You might even want to consider starting him. You might lessen some of his, you know, special teams burden if you anticipate his getting, you know, 15 carries or something of the ball tomorrow night. But you're definitely going to look at Shane Vereen. And whoever you end up deciding you're going to activate as well, whether it's James White or you bring up Jonas Gray, those are the guys you're going to rely on. Let's see if they can do it. And Tom's going to find Gronk. You know that. And Tom's going to look for Tim Wright. Tom's going to look for Brandon LaFell. So I don't know that you want to do anything out of the ordinary. I find that this game plan is very similar to what you probably had to go up with Buffalo. Now, I think we've talked about this a little bit, and I know I've talked about this on some other venues, but, you know, going into the year, I really liked the Jets' front seven. The secondary clearly was a problem. The secondary clearly still is a problem with D. Milliner IR'd now, so he's done. So that, I mean, I think he was the best one they had back there, and now he's done for the year. So, you know, like the Patriots losing, you know, two key pieces of their puzzle last week, so did the Jets this past week. The Patriots are 4-2. The Jets are 1-5. So they've kind of come into it from opposite directions. They could not really, I would say they really couldn't afford to lose what they lost, but they did. So you've got a New York team now that's going to come in playing with a certain degree of desperation. And you know that Rex loves to spring the surprise. You know that Rex is probably going to throw some sort of little, you know, a monkey wrench into the game plan to give the Patriots a look, or, you know, either on offense or defense that maybe New England's not expecting for tomorrow. But if the weather does prove to be the great equalizer, then you really have to fall back on your basics. I don't know that you see a lot of trickeration, you know, when you've got, you know, stormy weather outside. And it's going to come down to who can stop the other one with a run. I still say advantage Brady when it comes to throwing the football, even against the Jets front seven, but they got to get to him. And if they don't get to him, and that's one of the things the Patriots' maligned offensive line did fairly well, considering the Buffalo speed rush, they did fairly well last week. You know, if they can perform at least the same way as they did against Buffalo, then you'd kind of like to take your chances, or you'd like your chances potentially, going up against the Jets secondary. A little bit more on that. Rich Cimini covers the Jets for ESPN New York, and he joined us here inside the playbook. Rich, thanks so much for taking a little time today. Sure appreciate it.
Thank you.
Let's kind of start with everything defensively, and with D. Milliner's absence, seems to take the one able body that you may have been able to rely on somewhat to a certain degree, know what you could get at the table with him in the defensive backfield. How do the Jets try to make up for his loss in particular, not only personnel-wise, but do they change what they can do well defensively?
Yeah, I think they've started that process a while ago of trying to adjust what they do defensively because, you know, he had missed some time. I think he had missed three games before the Achilles injury.
Sure.
So they've been accustomed to playing without him. And so they're playing more zone this year. They just don't have the corner. I mean, basically, they're playing with two backups at corner with Darren Walls and Phillip Adams. Adams wasn't even in training camp with the team. They got him on the final cutdown from Seattle. So, you know, so I don't think the Milner injury shocks the Jets the way, say, a Gerard Mayo injury would shock the Patriots. So I think they've been in this mode for a while now.
Well, this Jets team still seems to have some strength defensively, and I was just telling our listeners that I really like the way the Jets front seven lined up to start the year, with the obvious exception of the secondary. So where do you feel like this team has let itself down in terms of the front line or the linebacking core?
Yeah, I mean, those guys are playing well. I mean, like you said, you know, the last couple of teams have run on them a little bit, the Chargers and the Broncos, but the Jets were basically conceding the run in those games because they were overcompensating for the passing game,
mm-hmm.
playing a light box, and basically daring Rivers and Manning to run the ball. So that's why the numbers on the ground have gone up a little bit. But they're really good against the run. I mean, Wilkerson and Richardson are playing well in both aspects, pass and run. And so those guys are having Pro Bowl kind of years. So their front is playing well, and I think their front's going to have a big game against the Patriots. The Patriots have some problems with the offensive line. I think the Jets will be able to get some good pressure on Tom Brady. It's just that the back-end issues have really and plus the schedule. I mean, they've played this will be the sixth really good quarterback that they've faced. So that hasn't helped either.
I would agree with the matchup. I think there's certainly an opportunity there for the Jets against a Patriots offensive line that's been a kind of a mishmash, at least to this point in time. The question remains whether or not they can get enough pressure on Brady to disrupt what he wants to do. I think it helps New York in the fact that the Patriots won't have their A running back in a guy like Stephen Ridley. We're all kind of waiting to see who might end up getting the majority of those carries. But Rex always – this is one of the intriguing things about a New York-New England matchup of a year. Rex always seems to bring something that throws a little bit of a – you know, we'll go outside of the football vernacular here – throws a little bit of a curveball at New England. I don't know if you can even, you know, foresee what that might be here. But in an effort just to give the Patriots a little pause, and because the Jets have to play with a little more desperation, having lost five in a row, would that be – in character to see Rex try to come up with something like that again for tomorrow?
Yeah, for sure. I mean, Brady's, they did a good job against Brady last year in those games. I think Tom's numbers against the Jets were really, I think he was under 50%, you know, for both of those games last year. It's very unusual. So Rex has a good plan for Brady. He usually does. I wouldn't be surprised if they just carbon copy the plan they used against Manning and play a light box. You know, they moved out their outside linebackers out to the perimeter to chip the receivers and basically dare the other team to run. And mm-hmm. I think the Jets might be willing to play that game against the Patriots as well, especially with Ridley out. Now you're going to go with Vereen, more of a change of pace back. So they may just carbon copy that game plan from last week against Denver.
I think it makes a lot of sense. Rich Cimini, ESPN New York, joining us here inside the Patriots playbook. We flip it to the other side, lost Brian Winters, so there's the other injury, the other starter that New York has lost, as the Patriots lost a couple of starters a week ago. How does that affect the offensive line in terms of who comes in to replace him and continuity?
Ode Obuchi will start at left guard. He's a fifth-round pick out of Virginia from last year. Basically redshirted last year as a rookie, didn't play at all. And this year he's only played 33 snaps in backup situations. So this will be his first NFL start. You know, I'd like to say they lose a lot there, but, you know, frankly, Winters wasn't even playing that well, so I'm not sure how much of a drop-off it'll be. Either way, they're going to struggle there at left guard, so it's a problem area. The whole offensive line's been underperforming the last couple of weeks.
Yeah, and you can certainly understand, where some of those problems lie. It still seems to me that running the football would be the Jets' strength. I'm not sure if the opportunity maybe to, and perhaps you can expound on this, because I know you guys have written about it on the site a little bit, but and addressed the subject, but have they sort of passed on an opportunity maybe to allow Michael Vick the chance to take this team up for himself by allowing Geno to kind of continue to learn under fire?
Yeah, the Jets, they missed the window is almost closed. I mean, let's face it. I mean, whatever flickering hope they may have left of the season, it ends if they lose tomorrow night. So, I mean, they're starting Geno tomorrow, and if they lose tomorrow and go 1-6 and then turn to Michael Vick, it's like, what's the point? At that point,
yeah,
the season's over. You might as well just play Geno and see if he can get any better, you know, to get a future read on him. But, yeah, the Vic ship has sailed. They missed that opportunity. Although I think you'll see Vic in the game tomorrow night in kind of a situational role. I wouldn't be surprised if they use him in some kind of gadget-type situation.
Why do you think that happened the way that it did? And why in particular they didn't maybe try to take advantage of that when, you know, Geno missed the meeting and, you know, maybe they could have punished him or what have you, sat him down, taught him a rookie lesson even though he's, you know, in his second year. Why do you think the Jets bypassed on that?
Well, they're dysfunctional. I mean, they have conflicting agendas. With the general manager feels secure in his job, and he is taking a long-term view of the team. He wants to find out if Geno is going to be his guy or he has to go into the draft next year and draft another quarterback. Rex Ryan obviously has to win now. His rear end is on the hot seat. He probably won't survive this. He wants to win now. So, yeah. You have conflicting agendas there, and honestly, I've heard from people on the team. I don't know how good Michael Vick is anymore.
Yeah.
He was horrible against San Diego a couple of weeks ago. He admitted he was unprepared for the game. From what I understand from people who watched practice, he hasn't looked great in practice either. So, you know, I think they wasted $4 million on bringing him in. They're not even using him.
Well, you do have apparently Eric Decker tomorrow night. What about Greg Salas? Any idea?
Salas won't play. Decker will. Decker he's probably not 100%. He's had a hamstring issue, but he's pretty close to 100%. Salas had a cast on his wrist yesterday in the locker room. I don't think it's a long, long injury, but he's not going to play this week. So they'll have their top three receivers will be Decker, David Nelson, and Jeremy Curley.
There have been some comparisons. Jay Samaro, maybe as sort of a lesser version of a Rob Gronkowski type at tight end. Do you like those comparisons, or is it fair to say that maybe the book isn't complete there?
Yeah, let's not. The book is not only not complete. I don't think we've gotten out of the first chapter yet. So let's not go there yet. Jace did have a good game last week. He had 10 receptions and a touchdown. He also dropped a pass. I think the guy can be a player in this league. He's got the stature of a Gronkowski. He's about 6'5", 6'6". He's not a Jimmy Graham type in terms of athleticism. Who is, really? But, I mean, so he's a lot like Gronk in that he doesn't rely on athleticism. He relies more on his size and his body control and, you know, that sort of thing, and technique and route running. So he's got a future. He'll get the ball a lot tomorrow night. You can bet on that. But let's hold off on the Gronk comparisons right now.
Rich, I thought it was curious that I noticed as well that you guys, again, wrote about this earlier this week, that Rex had some words with Peyton Manning after last weekend's game, and one of the quotes was, "It's been an honor," almost indicating that maybe he's not sure if he'll ever face Peyton Manning on a football field again. What did you make of that?
Yeah, I still don't know what to make of that. I mean, I know Rex just has a tremendous amount of respect for Peyton Manning. He always has. So, it's just the wording of it. If in fact that is the way it was worded, it is weird, because even if Rex gets fired, and I'm sure he knows that there's a very good chance he will, he's going to be coaching somewhere in the league. You know, like he said yesterday, he goes, "What am I going to do, drive a truck?" So, he's going to be coaching somewhere, even if it's as a defensive coordinator. So I'm guessing Peyton will come back for another year. I don't know that, but so I'm sure, I don't know, maybe he was just in a nostalgic kind of mood, and it was a curious choice of words, and certainly in the media we ran with it.
Absolutely, and I don't blame you for a moment for doing that, because it was just a curious choice of words. You probably haven't really had a chance to sort of recoup on this, but I'll ask the question anyway. Where do you think Rex Ryan has gone wrong?
You know, a really good question. I mean, we could talk for a long time about that, but I'll give you the abridged version. I think the root of this year's problems really fall with the general manager, John Itzig. I just don't think the roster is any better than it was last year. And there's no doubt in my mind it's not any better. And it's hard to believe, considering they had $30 million in cap room to start the offseason and 12 draft picks. And it's not any better. And that's a really damning indictment of the general manager. So I think it starts there. He made a lot of highly questionable moves in the offseason. So I think Rex went in with a very limited roster. The one position that he could not afford to have an injury was cornerback. So what happens? You know, all the injuries get start at cornerback.
Right.
And then the Dimitri Patterson goes AWOL, and they cut him. And so it's been a mess. Rex is not without fault. I mean, his defense has been situationally not nearly as good as it has been in the past. And I think that falls on him. There's been a lot of penalties and lack of discipline. I think that goes on the coaching. But I think the root of the problem, I think, is just lack of talent.
Was it Rex's or John Idzik's idea to pass on Darrell Revis?
Oh, there's no question. Well, it was John Idzik and Woody Johnson.
Okay. I
mean, Rex wanted him back. He wanted him back badly. I mean, the Revis camp had sent word to the Jets that they were interested in coming back. Rex, I don't know if he ever went into John Idzik's office and lobbied. I don't think it ever got that far, but he absolutely wanted him back and was crushed, to say the least, as he said yesterday. It just makes him sick to his stomach to see Revis in a Patriot uniform. And the best corner he ever coached is playing for the team he hates the most, and you just know that Revis will make a big play tomorrow night, and he'll be the guy who basically ends the Jets season. I can tell you that right now.
Final question for you, Rich. I also noticed as well that Calvin Pace was quoted as saying that he doesn't like playing on Thursday nights, and I actually think he brings up some valuable points in terms of, you know, short work week, the potential for players getting injured. Is that a feeling shared by the Jets, or is this more of a byproduct of losing five in a row?
Well, Calvin is kind of a Debbie Downer kind of guy. I mean, he's always, he's always, he sometimes I wonder if he even likes his job, but he's what he's saying, I agree with. And I think a lot of players across the league feel the same way. It's really hard to play on a Thursday night on the road. And so I think 90% of the players would agree with Calvin, but I don't think it's the proper forum to air those. He comes across as a whiner by saying it the week of a game.
Yeah, understood. Well, Rich, safe travels this way. We appreciate a little time today and cluing us in on the current state of the Jets, and hopefully we'll get a chance to do this again soon.
All right, thanks.
Thanks, appreciate it. Rich Cimini, again, who covers the Jets for ESPN New York, ESPNNewYork.com, joining us here in the Patriots Playbook. Some pretty good insight, I thought, especially into some of the injury situations, into the whole Rex Ryan, I don't want to call it scuffle, but let's just say, and not even really a feud, but let's just say difference of opinion with John Idzik, the general manager. They clearly are driving two different directions. And we know who's going to win that battle. It's going to be the GM. I, for one, am pained, and I've said it on this show, I've written about it, I've talked about it in other venues, I am going to be sorry to see the Jets lose Rex Ryan. Not because the Patriots have won their fair share. Hey, let's remember, the Jets have also done their fair share of whacking the Patriots when Pats fans especially least expect it. What I've always appreciated about Rex is his honesty, his humor, his willingness to bust chops. And the fact that he is sort of the anti Bill Belichick. You know, we goof on Coach Belichick around here for what he doesn't say, and people in New York goof on and now are starting to say, okay, Rex, your act is kind of tired and worn, and maybe it's time to move on. People in New York criticize him for exactly the opposite. One thing that Rich Cimini just brought out that I think is important to remember, that when Rex Ryan is relieved of his duties as head coach of the NYJ, there's a very good possibility someone is going to hire him. Now, I don't know if that's necessarily as a head coach. Frankly, I think he deserves another shot as a head coach, because you've got to find a place where he's on the same page with the GM. If you can find that, then you've got, I think, you're a decent head coach. You got a guy that's not afraid to back down. You got a guy that loves physicality. You got a guy that likes to game plan and likes to take shots and likes to do different things. I think that would be, if I were in position to hire a coach and I couldn't get BB, I'd certainly look at Rex. Sometimes some people are just not suited for the fishbowl that is New York. It takes a special person. You know, it's taken Tom Coughlin all these years to learn how to exist. He's got two Super Bowl championships. I know that hurts Pats fans, but he has them. And yet they still want to ride his ass out of town on a rail because the Giants are 3-3. He's won them two Super Bowl championships. And they want to ditch Coughlin in the worst way. Rex has lasted longer in New York and probably done less, arguably with more, and he's still there. It's tough in New York. Their expectations are at least as high as what we would have here in New England. And yet, it's a bigger media area. It's the number one, you know, market in the country, largest city in the country. And the media is as tough there as they are anywhere. And we're plenty tough on our guys, too. Don't get me wrong. Because this is certainly a unique place. I think our fans here are much more knowledgeable. And that might offend some New Yorkers, and I apologize. But, frankly, I just think New England fans, I think there's a little more, let's see if I can get this right. Because I'm kind of doing this off the top of my head. But somebody asked me this question a couple of months ago. And I even talked about it doing a New York talk show not too long ago as well. I think New York fans have a tendency to want things their way based on things that happened 30 or 40 years ago, as opposed to New England fans who are certainly provincial. But I think New England fans are a little bit more open to trying something differently as long as the end result is winning. Does that make any sense to you? New York fans are just as passionate. They might be a little kookier than New England fans, but there's some kooks in New England, and I still love them. I love the passion, and I think there's passion in both areas. And there's something to the whole, you know, Frank Sinatra song. If you can make it, you know, here, you can make it anywhere. And I think that's true about New York and Boston and New England as well. Because you're operating really where the pressure to succeed is like no other in any other part of the country. And for those of you that live outside of the Northeast, you know, if you've ever been up here for any length of time, you know what I'm talking about. The media spotlight is as glaring here in this part of the country as anywhere on the planet. On the planet. And so the media has become hardened by that because they know that the players and the athletes that they cover, they've become hardened by that media glare, and it just sort of feeds off of each other, and it makes for a very difficult situation. I think Rex has handled it about as well as anybody. Tom Coughlin, remember how many people were killing him before he won his first Super Bowl title, you know, for being too disciplinary, too much of a disciplinarian. And they were ready to ride him out of town, and all of a sudden, bang, you know. David Tyree happened. So, you know, and I'm sure that there are Giants fans that love the fact that they stuck with them. And Jets fans, I'm sure, have been appreciative of sticking with Ryan for a while, but now this team is 1-5. They've lost 5 in a row. If they lose tomorrow night, 1-6, as Rich said, their season's done. It's over. They're not going to recoup from that. They'd have to win 9 in a row just to be maybe in the wild card hunt. That's not going to happen. So certainly there's going to be a fall guy, and it's going to start with Rex. I think that's unfortunate, but again, that's part of the business of sport. The proof is in the wins and the losses, and if you don't have them, it's time for somebody else to give it a try. All right, webradio at patriots.com, our email, 855-PATS-500, the toll-free telephone number. Twitter, at JR Broadcaster, John.Rook on Facebook. We're combining hashtag WTF Wednesday with hashtag Prediction Thursday. We're looking, while we focused a bit on the Jets already for What the Focus Wednesday, we want your predictions now because game time is tomorrow. Pats and Jets kick off week 7 of the NFL season. And coming up in the next hour, Russell Baxter, our pro football guru, will join us on that very topic, week 7 of the NFL. But right now, it's your time. We need your predictions. And, of course, we have the media guide slash yearbook for an accurate prediction still up for grabs through 6 weeks. Nobody's won. We lead it off with Andy in Vermont. Hey, Andy, you're in the playbook.
Hey, John. Thanks for having me on.
Yes, sir.
I haven't talked to you in a couple of weeks, but I see the need. And it might be obvious for some people that maybe a linebacker or another running back this, you know, tomorrow night, but linebacker, yes. Gray, I really like him as a running back. But right now, the offensive line guys, concussions and whatever else, they're pretty banged up. I think for a score tomorrow night, it's going to be a home game. The weather should be good, the mid to high 60s.
Yeah, but it's supposed to be rainy. It's supposed to be rainy. Rain, yeah. Rain and wind forecast for tomorrow.
Oh, jeez. Well, I still see the Patriots probably winning by 10 to 14 points. So I'm going to say 28-10.
28-10. So you definitely don't like the Jets' ability to score in this one.
Well, you know what? When Vic went in a couple weeks ago, he was sort of like lofting the ball. He had no zing on it. And if Brady is getting some therapy on his ankle, we might not see Garoppolo. And I think the Patriots will pull it out. I like Debbie playing on the left side because Cannon just doesn't do it. Cannon's a right side type of guy, I think.
I won't disagree with that. I actually think that's a fair assessment. All of his struggles have been on the left side. Why? I'm not sure. Maybe it's because of the way the plays are dictated. Maybe he just has a harder time, you know, moving laterally to his left. I don't know. Whatever it is, I kind of like. I actually like him at right tackle as his best position. And yeah. I thought he would make a quintessential NFL guard, having seen him play in college. And so far, I haven't seen that transition take place. So, you know, if he's got to be on the right side, then we'll keep him on the right side. I'm not sure I agree with it on Devy. I think Klein is better on the left side in terms of playing that guard position, but that's just a personal choice.
Yeah, I agree with you there, too. And if he's healthy, I really don't see them bringing up Barker, even though Barker was playing a little bit on the practice squad last year. And he's definitely in the way back. I see their need for an offensive guy, but maybe even Milano been back on the active 53.
Well, I think that's a step in the right direction in terms of trying to pick up from, you know, Mayo's absence defensively. And, you know, I think that they will see the heavy defensive package tomorrow night because New York, what they do and what they, you know, we think they can do well is still run the ball, even with some glitches in the offensive line, as Rich Cimini just told us. But I personally expect the Patriots to try to take that run away and make Geno beat him even with bad weather, you know, with his arm. And I'd certainly say that's advantage New England. So, you know, Villano bringing in an extra body for the rotation at tackle makes more sense than anything.
Yeah, I have a lot of confidence in Davis trying to fill the role that Mayo was playing. I would actually set him ahead of White and probably have Skinner and White backing up
right.
Hightower and Collins. And I would go, like I said before, a five-man front defensive line to start the pace of the game and maybe do Hightower and Collins backing up them and then getting the other three in. I thought Fleming does well, especially in preseason. I see him playing as well as Skinner has been playing.
Well, we'll see if he gets the move. We'll see if he gets the move up. That's also a possibility. I think he'd be a candidate for that. Yep.
And I really like Jonas Gray. I think if we had a Jonas Gray, sort of like what the Giants have in the BC running back Andre
Williams. Yeah. Okay. And he was known for that. You know, the heavy kind of guy when he played at Notre Dame too. So I think that's a possibility. That's what to me the inactive list when it comes out. That's the big intrigue for tomorrow is to see who the Patriots, at least for the short term, have decided to go with. Because after the game's over, they're going to have a full 10 days to worry about it again.
Yeah, they're having to wait to decide who they're going to move up. You know, he could be an offensive line guy like Barker.
Yeah,
it could be defensive guy, line guy like Milano. It could be moving Gray up or even flying.
Right.
So.
Right, absolutely.
And I think the Patriots will pull it out, and it's too bad it's a short week because it puts extra pressure on the coaching staff.
Yeah, it does, but it's something I know that they're used to. All right, 28-10, Andy, you got it. You're in the books for that one. Matt in Watertown, Mass. Is up next. Hello, Matt.
Hey, what's up, John? How's it going?
Good, Matt.
Just wanted to make a ask a few questions, make a couple points, then I'll get my prediction, and I'll let you go.
Sure.
I just wanted to find out, is Brandon Browner activated already?
We don't know yet.
Okay, gotcha. We won't know until tomorrow?
Probably not.
Gotcha. Well, I guess that rules out asking about Stork. But
again, we'll wait until we get another injury report after 4 o'clock today to see what his status is. But if he's a DNP, I'd say it's unlikely he's activated.
Okay. Well, I just wanted to, after watching Alphonso Dennard, is he suspect right now? Because he hasn't been doing a very great job on the outside, especially covering downfield. Is there something going on with him? Or
I don't know that. I don't know that I'd call him suspect. I just say that he, he's had some inconsistencies to his game where we've seen him play real well. Especially even in zone coverage. And then, when he's been forced, to come up and press man to man, he's been blown by. So, and there hadn't been, the safety help come over the top and it left him vulnerable. We saw that happen against Cincinnati when, Sanu burned him for a touchdown. So, I think he's adequate as a number two, corner. I'm not ready certainly to give up the ghost on him. I think as long as he's not your primary guy, then I think Dennard is certainly more than a capable defensive back that's only, we hope, only going to continue to get better.
Okay. How about utilizing Tim Wright a little bit more often and the two tight end sets? In the game in Buffalo, I didn't really see too much of that.
Well, they did do a lot of two tight end and three tight end sets in Buffalo, but here's the catch. Ho'omanawanui is a better blocker. And because they were going heavy again with the run game and sometimes even bringing in the extra tackle in order to, help plow the road, so to speak. And they had to do that against Buffalo's front four because that may be the best front four they face all year. And in order to try to find some kind of a crack, they wanted the extra blocking help up front. So there really wasn't much of a call for Tim right now. He did come in and he caught a touchdown ball. But I'm just saying that that's why you don't see him more, because he's not the blocker that Hooman is. So it really depends on the situation. If the Patriots are going to run the ball and they're going to have to continue to give their offensive line as it continues to sort of form itself, help, you're probably going to see more of Hooman at tight end than you are of Wright, and that's just a fact of life.
But as far as a pass catcher, you'd go with Tim Wright over Hooman.
Well, without a doubt.
Well,
that's not denigrating Hooman. That's just Tim Wright's a different player. He's more of a wideout. He's truly more of that wide receiver ability that, frankly, the Patriots had when they had Hernandez.
Mm-hmm.
He's not the same kind of guy, though, as Hernandez. I'm not going to compare him. I think he could be shiftier. The problem is that, athletically speaking, he's not the build, same build. He's more of a long, lean guy. He's more of a receiver as opposed to, really Hernandez was more of a tight end H-back type.
Mm-hmm.
There's a difference. Remember, Hernandez, when he was here, he lined up in the backfield sometime.
Oh, yeah.
Okay? And he ran with a football, sometime. You're not going to see that with Tim Wright.
Oh, I'd hope not.
No. I doubt that.
Yeah, but let me get you my prediction. I'll let you go, John.
Sure.
I'll say the Jets could put up 17 points on the Broncos.
They did.
I'll say 27-17, Patriots.
All right. Pats 27, Jets 17. Okay, I'm kind of leaning toward that, around that number myself. I'll probably come off it just a little bit, but I think that's a pretty solid pick. Melvin in Tennessee, you're up next in the playbook, Melvin.
Hey, what's going on, John?
Hey, Melvin.
Good. Speaking of the Rex Ryan thing, I think I've kind of hinted at this somewhat, just speaking about defensively. I went back yesterday. I recorded the Monday night game against the 49ers versus the Rams. So I was looking at it, and the one thing that I think I really love about those teams are just the ability, I think, defensively to get pressure. I think if it, the Jets were disguising coverages, I think I looked at the 49ers yesterday, and I was thinking this is out of the sense, these 96, but they do so many stunts here and there.
Mm-hmm.
They can plug in anybody, and that pressure is still going to be generated. I think it was number 51, I think, for the 49ers yesterday. He was subbing for somebody, but he was wreaking havoc out there against the Rams. And it's stunts that they do and disguise and stuff and just the ability, just a scheme-based stunt and, you know, pressure that I think teams like that are good at. I would love for New England to eventually do that. I think we don't have the manpower just to sit up there and, you know, Chandler Jones to beat somebody, you know, like a J.J. Watt, of course, nobody like that. But I think if we can get, I would love for us to get more pressure if it's scheme-based, then I think that we've been generating. I would love for us to eventually, because I think right now, if any year we have the defensive backs, but somewhat, I think Dennis is going to get his playing well. Because like you just got to say, Dennis, I love Dennis. I think he's really good and pretty good. Look around, I think that's the most comfortable I've been with the corner for this team in a very long time. A very long time. So I like to just, you know, go get somebody. I want to see us go get quarterback. As far as pressure, I mean, as far as the score and stuff like that, tomorrow I'm going to go. I think it's going to be raining. I think it'll be low score. I think about 24-17 New England.
24-17, yep. That's a pretty good pick.
I think that's my goal. That's the only thing I got to say, John.
Good stuff, Melvin. Great stuff. Good analogies there. You know, not a bad thought on going after the extra players. Gary in Ohio is up next. Hey, Gary, you're in the playbook.
Hey, how are you doing, John?
Good, Gary.
Hey, I ain't talked to you since that Cincinnati win.
Well, you got to be feeling.
We was going to beat them, didn't we?
You got to be feeling a little better about yourself now, huh?
Yeah, I knew we was going to do it. I told you, people in Cincinnati doubted them.
Well, it doesn't surprise me how quickly fortunes can change. It never surprises me. And the Patriots have been on more of an uptick while Cincinnati's struggling.
Well, I tell you what, our offense is clicking on all cylinders. But the thing that's worrying me is this Ridley injury, because we're going into the Jets game. Okay, now it's going to pour the rain, supposedly. We'll see come Thursday night.
Mm-hmm.
What are we going to do in the run game? I mean, the Jets are stout up front. We've got to have a run game in that kind of weather. Vereen ain't going to handle it. We'll see with Bolden. I mean, what's your take on it?
On the weather?
No, on our run game.
Well, you know, I don't really see the big problem right now until, you know, those guys that they have show us that they're not the answer. Vereen deserves the opportunity to be the every down guy. I think we all think he can't do it. But he's never really been given that opportunity unless, you know, because we're not privy to practice, so we don't really know. I think that he'll be given a chance to do it. I think that Bolden most definitely will get some opportunities. We'll see what they decide to do in terms of activating either you know, the rookie James White or possibly bringing up Jonas Gray from the practice squad and see if one of those guys can't, you know, try to work themselves into the mix. It'll be tough on a short week. I think that you'll probably see Bolden and Vereen, you know, get Ridley's carries. That's what my at least initial impression will be, because it's a short work week.
Well, I agree with you that nobody's gave Vereen the chance yet, but here's my worry with that, is his stability. How you know, I mean, as far as injuries, you know, he's a little guy.
Well, but, I mean, you know, if he – listen, injuries are a problem for everybody in this league, okay, Gary? And they will be. It doesn't matter how big or how small you are. The problem with Shane Vereen is that, you know, he's sort of been typecast already as that Kevin Faulk, third down back, catching the ball out of the backfield type of guy. And, you know, and I remember when Faulk was here in his heyday, he ran between the tackles pretty well himself. So, you know, he wasn't really maybe big enough for the every down job. But then again, they had somebody to take care of that. A guy by the name of Corey Dillon comes to mind, certainly. So why put him in a role where you already have somebody better suited? The Patriots don't really have right now somebody better suited that's healthy. So rather than go out and get another person, let's see if this guy can handle it. And if he can't, well, then you've got options.
Well, that's true. So, on to my prediction, I'm pulling for the Patriots. I think they're going to win. I think that it's going to be a close one. I think it's going to be a 10-16 game.
16-10?
16-10 Patriots.
Ooh, one score, one possession, low scoring, last, who has the ball last type of thing. All right, Gary, that's good stuff. Here's another Ohio call. Daniel is in Ohio. Hey, Daniel.
Hey, Demon LeJean.
How are you?
Pretty good. I'm actually worried about the run game myself, but I think we'll be all right with Green and Blunt. The only problem I saw is that a lot of run protection and block with Green. I don't know if the O-line is not gelling with him, but, man, every time he gets the ball, I just feel like he runs into his line.
Well, he's got to do a good job of identifying where he thinks the creases are going to be. And those guys, those blockers, have to hold their blocks a little bit longer, because that's where Ridley excelled, in my opinion. You know, Ridley got himself into trouble when he danced. But when he hit the hole, he hit it quickly, and he was usually able to hit that seam. And that's why we saw Ridley have some success. Vereen has to identify those cracks, where they're going to be, and those blockers may have to hold it just a split second longer than they did for Ridley, for Vereen to have, you know, like results. And it's going to be up to Vereen not to do the dancing and hitting the hole if the hole is there.
Right, and I'm hearing a lot on blogs, you know, we're trying to shuffle around, maybe try for Blunt again, because he wasn't happy, I guess, interview he gave after the game. Speaking about, he was at a great team with New England.
Yeah, we actually talked about that yesterday, and it's a little bit of a short week to really put anything like that together. But I mean, I'm certain that something will be, you know, discussed, if it hasn't already been, between now and playing Chicago next week, and whether or not you could, you know, you want to expend not only the draft pick that it would take to get him, but also the salary that you'd be, you know, taking on in order to bring him back.
I think he was worth it. Last year, he impressed me a lot. And another thing, I'm in with LaFell. I'm on his ship, man. I think we need to give this kid a few more looks, and I'm impressed. So.
Well, he's going to continue to get those looks. He's coming along, I would tell you that. And what I like about Brandon LaFell is his willingness to stay on his feet, you know, and get the yards after catch. That's what has impressed me.
Yep. Okay, my prediction, I'm going to keep it with the 24-17. I think that's going to be just because of the rain. And run game is kind of questionable until I see what Vereen and Bolden can do.
Okay. I like it. 24-17 seems to be the common denominator in this one. Thanks, Daniel. Here's Jay in Florida. Jay, you're up next in the playbook.
Hey, how you doing?
Good, Jay.
Hey, you know, I hear everybody's calling in and they're worried about the running game. But I really don't think the running game is going to be our problem with the Patriots having a short passing attack anyway to sometimes substitute for a running game.
Mm-hmm.
My concern is, for the last 3 years, we have not been able to generate a pass rush. And that makes mediocre quarterbacks look like they're pro bowlers. And that scares me. When we get into playoff games, that has come evident in the last 3 years. We could not get Peyton Manning off his spot. And if we can't do that with the quarterbacks we're going to be facing the next 5 or 6 weeks, we're going to be in trouble. I don't care if we've got Darrell Revis or Brandon Byram out there. If you cannot get pressure on the quarterback, it's not going to matter much.
Well, there's some real truth to what you're saying. I think the Patriots realize that. You might have to see New England get out of its comfort zone and its comfort area and see them try to find some creative ways to put more pressure on a guy like Manning when it comes around in a few weeks.
And I wonder if we have the personnel to do that. Ninkovich on the end, he looks undersized.
He is.
And you know, and I look back at the Cincinnati game. If Dalton hits a couple of missed throws, we would have been in trouble.
Well, you can say that about almost any game, though, Jay. So I don't know that it's necessarily just because it was Cincinnati. You can say that about, Kyle Orton hitting a couple of more throws on Sunday.
You're right.
So, I mean, that's just the way games play out. Good teams have a way of putting themselves in the proper position. New England did that last week by getting Buffalo to turn it over. That will be very important tomorrow night, especially if there's sloppy conditions. Patriots have to turn the Jets over and work on some short fields. If they do, the Patriots should be in good order. But if the Patriots turn it over themselves, or, you know, let's say they don't, or they, you know, turn it over themselves and they give the Jets short fields to work with, they're going to be in trouble. And you can say that whether the weather's bad or not, you can say that about almost any game. Right now, the Patriots are doing the turning over. That's why they're at the top of the NFL in that category.
I agree with you. But when we start facing good quarterbacks, good offensive systems, I think that without pressure, we're going to be in trouble. Tomorrow, I think if we don't put a pressure on Geno Smith, he's going to look pretty good on it. I think that's probably what he wants to see. If we can't get any pressure on them, they can pressure our quarterback, I think it'll be a close game.
The key tomorrow night is whether or not the Patriots first and foremost have to stop what New York does best, and what they do best is run the ball, comparatively speaking. And Geno is gonna make some mistakes. He has. That's the kind of quarterback he is. Question for the Jets is whether or not they want to live with that in an effort to see if he can become their quarterback of the future, and that's probably what they'll spend the rest of this year trying to determine. But as far as tomorrow night is concerned, you got to feel like Darrell Revis is gonna try to shut down Eric Decker. I can see that matchup, possibly happening, even though Decker's got some physical size on him. But I think the Patriots would take their chances with the other guys. So, if that happens, then you're really going to kind of limit, your opportunities. And listen, if Geno Smith can beat you with his arm, I think you take that chance, because I think they're wagering that that's not going to happen.
Right. I agree with you. I enjoy your show, man. And you guys keep it up. And my prediction is, 24-27, Pat.
27-24, Patriots. All right. Jay, that's good stuff. Thanks, buddy. Appreciate that. Let's pause here for a break. Then we'll continue with your predictions on this hashtag WTF Wednesday / hashtag Prediction Thursday in the playbook. Send us your predictions either Twitter at JR Broadcaster or via email, webradio@patriots.com. We'll also have some time for some more phone calls coming up in about 30 minutes. But after the timeout, we get the guru in the playbook, Russell Baxter, right here on patriots.com radio.
NFL Mobile from Verizon is perfect for a guy like me. At home or on the go, NFL Mobile keeps me connected to all the action across the league. I can watch live NFL games on Thursday, Sunday, and Monday nights. Track player and team news, player tweets, watch NFL Network 24/7 and more. Plus, with NFL Mobile, I have real-time access to NFL Red Zone, so I can watch every touchdown from every game on Sunday afternoons. So I'll never be without football. Especially when Jaws and Muffin can't find that oh-so-perfect spot. Oh, hold up. Go. That's it. Come on, kick it into hyperdrive. Touchdown!
Get NFL Mobile on America's largest 4G LTE network and discover why more people choose Verizon than any other network. Call *NFL to download NFL Mobile now. Verizon, official wireless provider of the New England Patriots. Airtime message and data usage applies. Available on select smartphones. Coverage not available everywhere. Don't call or text while driving.
Before Jenny met her new nephew, Wyatt, before she drove to New York, and before she picked up a Boston Red Sox onesie down the street from her Alston studio, Jenny got 1% back on tires, 2% back on snacks, and 3% back on gas using her Bank AmeriCard Cash Rewards credit card. So Jenny got ready to do what she loved with cash rewards she liked. That's the power of the Bank AmeriCard Cash Rewards credit card. That's Bank of America. Life's better when we're connected. With the Bank AmeriCard Cash Rewards credit card, you can earn 1% cash back on all purchases all the time. 2% cash back on groceries and 3% cash back on gas. Apply today at bankofamerica.com/getcashback. Grocery and gas bonus rewards apply to 1,500 in combined purchases each quarter. Call 1-888-224-8735 for details about credit costs and terms. Copyright 2013 Bank of America Corporation.
Ask the rest of the country what comes to mind when they think of New England. The answer isn't Paul Revere or Tri-Corner Hats, maple syrup or Walden Woods. They now think of dominance. The success of the sleeveless hoodie, 3 Super Bowl championships, AFC East champions 10 out of the past 12 years, the first NFL dynasty of the millennium. So while the other 44 states now think of us more for our wins than clam chowder, that's fine. Just ask anybody here. The Pats are all we think about, too. Gillette is proud to have played a role in the ascent of the New England Patriots, our New England Patriots. Because the logo hanging high above Gillette Stadium isn't just team sponsorship. It's our declaration of allegiance to the fans from Maine, New Hampshire, Vermont, Massachusetts, Connecticut, and Rhode Island. The New Englanders that have helped make Gillette what we are today. From Boston for New England, we're Gillette, the best a man can get.
It's Jim from Ace Ticket. The New England Patriots are back in action, and Ace Ticket, the Patriots' official fan travel partner, is behind the team, from Foxborough all the way to Arizona. Ace Ticket is your official home for all Boston sports tickets, with free and easy pickup in Kenmore Square, across from the Boston Garden, or game day pickup at Patriot Place. So treat yourself or impress someone. Go to aceticket.com or call 1-800-MY-SEATS. 1-800-MY-SEATS.
Follow the Patriots like never before with the official Patriots mobile apps for iPhone, Android, and iPad. Get instant access to all the latest news, stats, and analysis, plus live Patriots Game Center. Search New England Patriots in your device's app marketplace to get the latest Patriots news, audio, and video in the palm of your hand. Download the official Patriots mobile apps today and stay connected.
Good afternoon. My name is Russell, and I am a wilderness explorer in Tribe 54, Sweat Lodge 12. Are you in need of any assistance today, sir?
It's time to go around the NFL with football guru Russell Baxter on Patriots Playbook.
We're always in need of assistance from this gentleman, Russell Baxter, pro football guru himself. ProFootballGuru.com, Bleacher Report, Cold Hard Football Facts, you name it, he's probably done it. Good afternoon, Russell.
Good afternoon. My name, never mind. it's just so addictive, isn't it?
It is. It really is. I totally agree with that. So I'm glad that you could find it in your way to join us a day earlier than you normally do. But, we get to be a part of it tomorrow night. We're a part of the whole Thursday night phenomenon now.
Exactly. And you know, we had a fun game last Thursday night. Didn't look that way early, but indicative of what we have seen all year with comebacks. And it's not just been comebacks, John. It's been near comebacks.
Mm-hmm.
Seen other teams up by 24 or 27 and, you know, make things interesting, as the Texans did. But, I mean, you know, after five straight weeks of 20-plus games, 20-point-plus games, that was fun to watch. And I don't know how close this will be, but I don't know if I'm necessarily expecting something lopsided. But, you know, I think it'll be somewhat entertaining. I mean, obviously the Patriots have, you know, down a couple of key guys. But to me, the Jets seem like they're down about 45 guys.
Yeah, yeah. It kind of does a little bit on both ends. We'll spend a little time with that coming up. But just overall, you mentioned the Thursday night phenomenon. That's why. Any thoughts as to why we've seen some of the big score discrepancies or disparities on the Thursday night game thus far?
I honestly don't know. I mean, you know, for a while there, the home team has a great advantage. Well, then we saw the Giants go blow Washington out in Washington. And last week we saw the Colts win on the road. So, I mean, it's hard to get a finger on why it keeps on, why it has happened. And it's not for lack of familiarity. I mean, with the exception of Green Bay, Seattle the first week, John, they're all divisional games. So it's, you know, I think it's just happenstance or coincidence that it's worked out. But as I told people, because it's so funny, people have, you know, these Thursday night games stink, they're not competitive, and so on. I said, you honestly expect that every Thursday night game is going to be competitive because it's on national TV? I seem to recall this game that was the first weekend in February that everybody around the world was watching. That wasn't very competitive, was it?
New.
You can't see these things. I mean, it's like saying, I'm going to go see, you know, Godfather 4, and it's going to be great.
Well, if you were my girlfriend, she'd know that Godfather 4 would be great because she's seen all three of the other three probably about 30 times each.
And I probably picked a bad example because people will argue, as you know.
Partial to it, yes.
Argue.
Yes.
Godfather 2 might have been better than Godfather 1.
Yes.
Okay, here's no argument. Arthur 2 on the rocks was not as good as Arthur.
Yeah. I would agree with that. I didn't think Rocky 2 was as good as Rocky either.
No, but Rocky III wasn't bad.
No, I liked Mr. T. That was good. I liked Mr. T. That one worked.
Yeah, I thought. Oh no, he was terrific at the angle of Mickey dying.
Yes, that was pretty good.
But
that one worked.
The transformation of watching him come back and coming back as, like, you know, a lighter boxer and becoming more of a boxer. I thought I give Sylvester Stallone credit. Eventually, you ran out of ideas, But for the most part, he kept it. He kept you thinking a little bit.
He did. He did, and that's why I liked the Rocky III better than II, because II was sort of predictable. You knew he was going to win and come back and, you know, and claim the championship. But you know, the III with Mr. T. You know, the whole what's your prediction? Pain. You know, yeah. That kind of stuff. That was that brought a real villain aspect into it that
well,
you need to have in sequels.
He put
prediction. Pain.
You know?
Yeah.
I mean, he wound up with, then with the A-Team, and he took part in WrestleMania, and, I mean, he launched his career, which, you know, if you really think about it, Sylvester Stallone, who had done some bit acting and other movies before Rocky, really launched his own career.
Right. That's exactly
in
right.
Rocky,
what'd you say, paper champion? I'm going to beat you like a dog.
We'll beat you like a dog.
And nobody had ever dreamed it would ever win Best Picture and so on. So it's I think the thing that's even harder to believe, it's almost 40 years old now.
That is shocking. That is shocking. I agree with that. All right. We've digressed enough. Let's start within the division. We'll come back again and save the Patriots for last, even though they're the first game this week. Within the division, you have the Buffalo Bills at home against Minnesota, and you have the Miami Dolphins on the road at Chicago. Let's start with Miami, only because the Bears are the next opponent for the Patriots after tomorrow night. And I know Miami's still got to be stinging a little bit after getting beat in the last 6 seconds by Green Bay.
You know, as I was watching Green Bay come down the field, and they got within, the 3-yard line or whatever it was, with 6 seconds to play.
Yeah, yeah.
You know what was funny? Here's the thing that popped into my head. And you watch Aaron Rodgers throw the football, and I don't think I've ever seen anyone throw the ball the way he does. Now, that's not the saying he's the best. That's not the saying he throws the best ball. There's something different about the way he throws the football.
Mm-hmm.
There's a velocity to it. And yet a touch to it that he doesn't have Marino's release, but he throws it with a spin and a velocity that is, I mean, to me, the old guy that I am, the two tightest spirals I ever saw anybody throw where the ball didn't wobble on rare occasions was Warren Moon and Terry Bradshaw. Okay? Those were tight spirals.
Mm-hmm. Well, maybe.
And my point is this. Because of the way Aaron Rodgers throws the ball, John,
yep.
He's one of the few quarterbacks who could get where they were in 6 seconds without a timeout and still run two plays in 6 seconds.
That's true. We
saw it. Andrew Corliss turned around, and the ball was there. And
yeah.
It was over in a blink of an eye. And, you know, Green Bay's defense still a little left to be desired, but, you know, they're humming right now, and they're getting the takeaways again.
Yeah.
Which was part of their MO when they won the Super Bowl 4 years ago. Everybody thinks it was all about Aaron Rodgers. Remember, they had all those pick sixes in terms of turnovers. So, I mean, Miami, who played a tough game last week, they're so up and down. And you know, I know the Bears haven't won a home game all year. Now would be a good time.
Yeah, now would be a good time. I was going to say that accuracy on the spinning ball, the spiraling ball that you talked so well about a guy like Aaron Rodgers was throwing must have come from the workouts that Hans and Franz put him through.
Oh, I pumped you up. That's very cool. Yes. But, I mean, listen, I mean, just an extraordinary play. And you know, what's kind of get lost with this Miami-Chicago game, because he wasn't there very long, but I guess you can do kind of a reunion tour with Brandon Marshall in a lot of places. But
sure.
It's Brandon Marshall, who, if I remember right, the last time the Bears and the Dolphins played, okay, was a Thursday night game in Miami. And I seem to recall, and I'm sure someone will dig this out, I think Jay Cutler was on the sidelines, and I think Brandon Marshall flipped the ball to him in disgust. The Bears won that game like 16 or 19 to nothing on a Thursday night.
Hmm.
And then all of a sudden they were teammates again.
Wow.
So, and you saw both Marshall and Jeffrey over 100 last week. I don't know. I mean, listen, Brent Grimes is one of the best cornerbacks in the league. And Cortland Finnegan, you know, it can be a little hot and cold.
Yeah.
But I think, listen, the Bears have lost their last three home games going back to last year. The Packers game,
mm-hmm.
which nobody will ever forget, with Randall Cobb running loose.
Sure.
Earlier this year against Buffalo, they fell at home. And you know, it's been an odd start. I mean, meanwhile, the Bears doing terrific on the road.
Yeah, on the road, they're 3-1 on the road, 0-2 at home. Yeah.
Yeah. So I have to lean Chicago. I think maybe just that was probably their best defensive game of the year last week, in beating Atlanta, and maybe they get kind of jump started in a division that's, you know, it's kind of intriguing. You know, especially
sure.
Detroit and Green Bay continue to play the way they're playing.
Sure. All right, well, we'll get back to Buffalo in a moment, but since you brought up Green Bay, they had to go back home at 4-2 and face a Carolina Panther team that got a tie only because Cincinnati couldn't convert a field goal at the end of overtime.
Well, I went to Men's Warehouse on Saturday, and I got a tie, too. So
you did?
Yeah.
Ba-dum-tsh. Love it. Love it. And we saw Cam Newton healthy, though, and that's why he certainly ran the ball to the extent that he did and with a lot of success last week.
Well, I look at Carolina, I think of it. I think, by the way, Carolina, I know they have to play Cleveland yet. Do you think they're tired of playing the teams from the AFC North?
No kidding, huh?
Giving up 37 to the Steelers, 38 to the Ravens, and 37 to the Bengals.
Right, right.
But if you really think about it, you look at what they've done the last four games, and the Carolina Panthers, the second-ranked defense in the league last season, the team that gave up the second-most points in the league last season, has given up 136 points in their last four games alone.
Mm. Mm.
I mean, that's more than some teams have given up. For the Patriots have given up 129 all season,
right,
even with a 41 spot in there.
Right, right.
So you think about that, and, you know, listen, I know Greg Hardy's not there, and they have changes in their secondary, but I'm just not sure what's going on. And their tackling and their run defense has been abysmal. Okay, we saw that. You know, we saw Le'Veon Bell a couple weeks ago on a Sunday night, hit him for an 81-yard run, and Giovanni Bernard broke a bunch of tackles inside, and all of a sudden he's off for an 89-yard touchdown. So I don't know if that means more Eddie Lacy than Aaron Rodgers, but I think it means Green Bay and a Carolina loss.
Yeah. All right, Buffalo gets to go at home again for a second straight week after losing to the Patriots. They got the Minnesota Vikings come in. Does Buffalo get healthy in a hurry here?
Well, you know, it's funny. Teddy Bridgewater got sacked 8 times last week by the Lions.
Yeah, I'm surprised.
I can only imagine what the Bills could do to him.
I know. I'm surprised he's still upright after 8 sacks. That's extraordinary.
What's really been interesting about the Vikings, and I know they, you know, changed quarterbacks a bunch of times here already this year, is one guy I thought a lot of people, including myself, would have, you know, kind of a great sophomore year, would be Cordarrelle Patterson. But he's been almost non-existent since, you know, running for that long touchdown against the Rams in week one.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think either team's going to do a lot of scoring here. I lean Buffalo at home. I actually picked the game like 17-6 Buffalo. But, you know, Teddy Bridgewater could be, you know, in for another long afternoon in terms of being sacked.
Yeah. I kind of agree with that one and like Buffalo there. Also in the AFC, the Patriot conquering Kansas City Chiefs have to take their act on the road. Now they're 2-3, so they've slipped under 500 again, and they get maybe, arguably, the best team in the NFL at this day, at this juncture, in the San Diego Chargers at 5-1.
Yeah, and I kind of, and that's how I feel. I think San Diego is the best team in the league playing right now, and I say it for this reason. Them in Dallas play almost similar styles of football. Now, San Diego is not necessarily getting the rushing yards that Dallas is getting, John, but they're still getting the attempts, okay? Now, the last 2 weeks, they actually are kind of getting the rushing yards with Brandon Oliver, the fourth-string running back, but the key is that San Diego revamped their offensive line last year, and that style of football, I mean, think about it, they're 9-1 in their last 10 regular season games.
Pretty impressive, yeah.
Going back to last season, I believe, I think there's at least one win over the Chiefs there. Kansas City, I think, has lost 6 straight at San Diego. Remember the big bugaboo. If you know, I know Kansas City finished second in the division last year and went to the playoffs.
Yeah.
But they were 0-4 combined against the Broncos and the Chargers last season.
Ooh.
And already 0-1, pardon me, against Denver this year. San Diego playing with a lot of confidence. And it's funny, I hear a lot of people talking about the Browns and the fact that they've only turned over the ball 2 times in 5 games this year, which is pretty impressive, by the way.
It is.
But the Chargers have turned over the ball 2 times in 6 games.
Even more impressive.
Yes.
Even more impressive. All right, so the Chargers at home against the Chiefs. You mentioned the Dallas Cowboys after impressing everybody, it seems, in winning at Seattle last week. They come back home against a reeling Giants team.
Yeah, you know, there's been two shutouts in the league this year out of 91 games in 6 weeks, each won by the New York teams.
Yeah, how about that?
San Diego shut out the Jets and the Eagles shut out the Giants.
Right.
Last week, who also sadly lost Victor Cruz. That was kind of emotional to watch that. You know, seems like one of the real good guys in the league, and he's lost for the season with the torn patellar tendon. But talk about eight sacks. Eli sacked it six times. Ryan Nassib came in. He got sacked a couple of times. But I think that what impressed me about Philadelphia last week was the fact that their backup offensive linemen are now starting to get the hang of things. Remember, they sat there and ran for 203 yards against the Giants without Evan Mathis, without Jason Kelce. Okay? I mean, they are, you know, Chip Kelly has really developed quite the program there. And you think about these couple of weeks, they lost to San Francisco. They struggled against the Rams. Their offense wasn't scoring any touchdowns. That wasn't the case against the Giants. Now, meanwhile, here come the Giants, who just gave up 203 yards on the ground to the Eagles against the persistent Cowboys. And again, just like Houston, in which they turned over the ball three times, think about the Cowboys last week, and John, you know this better than anyone. Think about the Cowboys in recent years when they get behind,
yep,
when they make mistakes.
Yep.
Okay? Let's throw the ball. Even when we're ahead, let's throw the ball. And yet last week they get down 10-0 on the road at Seattle, have a punt blocked. Tony Romo gets a ball snapped into his shin. Okay? Fumble lost.
And it certainly looked like it was going to go downhill in a hurry.
Right. Dwayne Harris fumbled the punt. And yet, after that 10-0, Dallas outscored the Seahawks, 30-13.
Right. That's exactly right.
And again, 37 carries, 162 yards, another 100 yards for DeMarco Murray, another great Tony Romo to Terrence Williams play. You know, you're seeing Romo, that escapability, he's obviously feeling better. We didn't see that earlier in the season. But the fact that they run they've run the ball 200 times already this year.
Yeah, and I don't know if DeMarco Murray can withstand that kind of punishment.
He'll sleep well in February and March.
Oh, yeah, if he can stay healthy before that.
Yeah, well, I'll say this. I'm talking about as a team, they've run the ball 200 times.
Right.
I bring up that number, not so much DeMarco Murray, but the fact that this team ran the ball only 336 times.
All year, yeah.
Last year,
yeah,
21 attempts a game. They're now about, you know, closing on 34 attempts a game. And yet their offense, you know, it's funny. Number one running game, fourth ranked offense. The passing attack is not a lot of yards, but highly productive, because when you can run, you can play action pass. And, you know, again, five turnovers combined the last 2 weeks and a punt block for a touchdown. And the Cowboys have stuck to their game plan. And you have to be impressed by that. And I see no reason why they won't stick to the game plan this week against the Giants team whose confidence has to be reeling a bit. I think they were feeling really good going into that Philadelphia game, and they came out feeling really awful.
Yeah, you're right. By the way, the Terrence Williams catch was as good a job of knowing where you are on the field as I've ever seen, I think, a receiver do.
Well, it's fun. I remembered saying to somebody, we all saw the play where Tony Romo got away from J.J. Watt and hit Terrence Williams for the touchdown. And, you know, I said to somebody, I said, it's an early nominee for me, at least, for play of the year. I didn't know Terrence Williams was going to be, you know, not only the valedictorian, but mm-hmm. the salutatorian.
Yeah.
Him and Romo, because, again, and, you know, the awareness of doing what you're doing, it almost looked like he was trying to throw it to somebody else.
You did. I think it was Witten.
Mark, yeah,
I think Witten was in front of it.
I think the Cowboys are, I don't want to say they're feeling it, because I'm sure there's some trepidation on their own parts knowing what has happened to them late in years. But I don't know if they've ever had a plan. Well, that's what they say. 20 years ago, they had a plan. Now they seem like they have a plan again, instead of just, you know, kind of drawing it up in the dirt.
Yeah.
And again, that persistency with the running game. I know it's boring, It's pretty boring when they hand you that trophy at the end, and I'm not picking the Cowboys win the Super Bowl.
Don't go there.
I know. I'm just saying, boring football wins more than exciting football.
Yeah, I'm just amazed, though, that they can lose arguably two of their best defensive players, too, one of them being, of course, DeMarcus Ware, and the defense to be as improved as it is. Clearly, I know they've had a change at coordinator, but that's a whole new thought process in Dallas, and it's been one of the more interesting surprises, I think, of the NFL season to this point in time.
I think when your defense is off the field 10, 12, 15 fewer plays per game than it was a year, in recent years. Okay? I think there's, again, it's not like the Cowboys have faced their, listen, a couple weeks ago they'd be down 21-0 to the Rams.
Yeah.
Okay? And on the road. And they're down Seattle 10-0 on the road. You know? I mean, other than imploding, and again, they have made their share of mistakes. I mean, they've turned over the ball 12 times this year.
Right.
Okay? It's not even like they're in the positive side of plus minus.
Yeah.
Okay, they're actually minus two.
Which is incredible.
But listen, their confidence they're getting from that ground attack, win you a lot of football games. And again, that sounds like, coach speak.
Mm-hmm.
Well, no, it might be win speak.
Yeah, I think you're right.
Yep.
Let's touch on the 49ers at the Broncos. Significant game. It's got the Sunday night cameras on it on NBC on Sunday. And San Francisco obviously had some work to do, but we're coming back to win. Broncos might have had a little bit tougher time with the Jets last week, but Broncos are at home. They're 3-0 at home thus far. Is this a test for them? Because I sense that maybe the 49ers aren't quite what we thought they would be.
No, but I mean, like the Patriots were, every sudden when people were burying them, people forget that last year after three games, the Niners were 1-2. In fact, the Niners were not only 1-2, they were coming off getting blown out in Seattle and getting blown out at home by the Indianapolis Colts last year.
Mm-hmm.
And then they rebounded and went on a little bit of a roll. They fell behind against the Rams the other night and yet still came back and won comfortably. They don't have all their pieces. We know that. We certainly understand that. And Colin Kaepernick is probably streaky at best. They didn't even run the ball all that well the other night, and yet they took advantage of the fact that the Rams have absolutely forgotten how to rush the passer with one sack in five games.
Mm-hmm.
Still, let's not bury the lead here. Peyton Manning has 506 touchdown passes. He needs three to become the all-time leader. He throws three pretty regularly these days. How's this for a number, John? Forget interceptions for a second. He doesn't have a lot. Peyton Manning has played 37 regular season games with the Denver Broncos.
Right.
He's thrown 107 touchdown passes.
That's a phenomenal number, and clearly it's because he's got the weapons to throw to.
No doubt. Now, I just want to throw this out here because I just think this is so significant. Think about that. 107 touchdown passes in 37 games for a guy who sat out the entire 2011 season.
Mm-hmm.
And people thought he might not play again.
Right.
I mean, that's just, I want to credit him for his person. And by the way, Julius Thomas has 9 touchdown catches in 5 games. Okay? I'm not sending up the alarm yet for breaking a record, but mm-hmm. just to remind people, forget the tight end record. Randy Moss holds the NFL record, 23 with the Pats in 2007.
Right.
That's certainly within range. You know, say Julius Thomas catches one touchdown pass the rest of the season in every game, that's 20 right there.
Sure.
So what's odd about Peyton Manning this year, and we know how he likes to spread out the football in terms of touchdown passes, John, he's thrown 15 touchdown passes to only 3 guys. Demaryius Thomas, Julius Thomas, and Jacob Tammy are the only guys on his team that have caught touchdown passes.
That's pretty incredible.
And yet he's thrown 15 of them. It's a little different. You don't have a really good shot on that team unless your last name is Thomas.
Yeah. So. that's a pretty good, that's one way to look at it. He's also daring teams, basically saying, look, I don't think you can stop us, so here you go.
No, and listen, they want to run more. They got a little running from Ronnie Hillman last week. But then, trust me, if Denver's going anywhere, I don't care what their record is right now, they've got to improve that running game. That has to get better. I mean, Monty Ball's hurt right now, and it's up to Hillman, but they got to get better. I mean, they currently rank 26th. They can't rank 26th.
Wow.
this year in rushing, expect to really take the next step. That was their undoing in the Super Bowl. They ran, what, 27 yards in the Super Bowl.
Right.
That was, I should say, one of their undoings.
Right.
But I say, listen, Denver at home, and I'm sure we'll hear the whole story about how Jim Harbaugh wanted to get Peyton Manning a couple years ago.
Sure,
that'll be relived. But by the end of the night, Denver has a win, and Peyton has the record.
Well, and that brings us then to the Thursday night game, the Jets at the Patriots. New England with the best record, 64-18 in regular season AFC East games since the beginning of 2001. It's the best intra-division record of any team in the NFL, and they've won 32 straight at home at Gillette against teams in the AFC. Any reason to think that streak will be broken on Thursday night?
Well, no.
Okay, thank you very much.
I just don't see it. I just don't see it. I mean, you have a Jet team that I think is scratching its helmets, and you have a Patriots team that all of a sudden has scored 80 points in two games. And last week didn't get a lot of run support, but they ran the ball more often than Buffalo did, and that is a key this year. Actually, it's a key every year, but it's really showing up the last couple of weeks around the league, the attempts opposed to the yards. And, you know, Brady only sacked a couple times last week, threw four touchdown passes. Is Brandon LaFell now starting to become a big part of the offense as well? We know he can run, and he certainly gives them the ability for the big play.
Right.
But you have to like what the Bills do. The Giants, I mean, the Jets don't really fare well up there. How, and now we talk about Brady and how hot he's been. The Jets have given up 15 touchdown passes this season, John, and have one interception. One.
That's okay. Not going to cut it. That's just flat out not going to cut it, right?
Yeah, it's like the Rams with one sack. When your statistics sound more like a trivia question than a statistic, you're in trouble.
Yep.
Okay, and, you know, D. Milner is now out for the year with the Jets. Listen, they'll have some success, you know, moving the football against New England. Some. I don't know if it translates into touchdowns, but there'll be a turnover or two. And I'm looking at New England like 28-16.
Think there'll be that much scoring?
Yeah, I think it will be by the Pats.
Yeah.
You know, three of the last four meetings have been decided by a field goal. I understand all that. And the Jets will absolutely put back their first effort. I just don't think they have the horses, okay? And every time we turn around, it's, I mean, a lot of people they were counting on this year to step up in terms of offensive weaponry has not happened. And defensively, the last couple of weeks, they've kind of been exposed, especially, you know, I mean, listen, I think they sacked Peyton Manning three times last week. When it was all said and done, they still wind up giving up, you know, 24 points on offense, and then, of course, then the pick six by Aqib Talib late in the game.
That's true, which cinched it, and yet they were right in the game until Talib made his pick.
Yeah, listen. If the Broncos would have walked out of MetLife Stadium with a 1-point win, they would have been happy because they certainly weren't. They certainly remember the last time they were there.
Yes, that is correct. All right, Russell, thank you for coming a little bit early this week. It's always appreciated. So we'll get back on schedule next week. How's that sound,
John? You could call me at 4 a.m. and I'd do this show.
Oh, you are the best. But then again, you know, don't tempt me because at 4 a.m. when I can't sleep, I might want to talk a little football with you.
I'm going to say this real quick. Get my share of comments on Twitter from people who listen to the show all over the country. I just want you to know that.
That's great. That's good to know. Good to know. And yeah, I also appreciate the FF tweet, you know, things that you share on Fridays. That's pretty cool.
Hey, billboard will travel.
I need help in the Twitter follower department. So thank you very much for that.
My pleasure, John. Anything for you, and I mean that sincerely.
Thank you, buddy. It's always appreciated. Right. Enjoy the games this week.
Enjoy your time at the game tomorrow night. I'm sure it'll be fun.
I will be avoiding raindrops tomorrow.
Oh, okay, Gene Kelly.
Will the window be open or closed?
Well, the window will be open.
It has to be open, right?
The window will be open, but I just will hope that things don't...
Convertible at home, John. How many times do I have to tell you?
Yeah, can we set up something like that, Kay, where I might be able to pull that off studio at home? I don't know.
You have to ask Fred if that's in the budget.
That's true.
But I look at you very enviously from across the field, you and your nice little comfy booth with your heaters warm and
you're standing on the sidelines.
I'm
not
there.
Soaked.
No heater, yeah. No cover, no nothing, getting pummeled.
There is an advantage to the press box, Russell. There is definitely an advantage.
Oh, are you kidding? I mean, You know, it's funny, you know, the times I've been in the press box, and I used to do a little more of it than obviously I do now and so on, but it was always amazing to me to hear some of my fellow median brethren complaining about the booth press box.
Yeah, isn't that amazing? I've never complained. I don't care how lousy it was. Yeah. I've never.
You just look at me and a rain or snow game, and that puts
I look at Kevin, and I'm like, you know, hey, guess what?
I can think of is you're watching a football game.
Yeah.
The guys on the field are doing all the work.
Yeah.
Behind glass, it's air conditioned, and you're getting fed.
Yeah. What's wrong with that?
Eating. And you think, I'm going to tell you something, you think fans get upset about hearing players complain? Let a fan hear that. Let a fan hear that. The guy who's not actually doing any work physically
really,
and writing about the game is complaining that his hot dog is cold.
Damn media. They just don't know how good they got it. But I think we do. I think we recognize that.
Oh, I think there's no, oh my goodness, it's, you know. It's the biggest box seat in the stadium.
Absolutely. I got the best seat in the house, no question.
Exactly. Let Kev come in and, you know, give him a cocoa. Okay.
I will. I'll give him a hot cocoa tomorrow. Talk to you next week, Russell.
You got it.
Thank you. Russell Baxter, the one and only Pro Football Guru. Catch him on ProFootballGuru.com. You see his reports, his stories, his statistical analyses on Cold Hard Football Facts, on Bleacher Report, several other places as well he's written, and he gets it done. Flat out gets it done. Let's spend the last 20 minutes or so in the playbook here getting your predictions, because it is, as we've said already, a sort of a combination show today between WTF Wednesday, hashtag, What's the Focus Wednesday, and Prediction Thursday, hashtag Prediction Thursday. So if you want to send it via Twitter and you haven't done it yet, at JR Broadcaster is the way you can go on Twitter. Facebook, John.Rook, got some Facebook posts that I will read here momentarily. And, of course, the good old-fashioned way via email, webradio at patriots.com. And because he's been so kind to hang on, our man Eldridge at 855-PATS-500, he gets the first call here. What's up, Eldridge?
Hey, John. How you doing, buddy?
Good, buddy.
Well, my prediction is 23-16.
I believe that's exactly what Russell picked. Oh, he said 24-16.
Yeah, I'm thinking 23. The reason why I'm saying that,
okay,
Mayo's out, and nobody knows for sure is how Tyler's going to play. So you got Collins and two unknown linebackers. And you know the Jets will try to run the ball.
Yeah, yeah.
So without, you know, we got Vince in the middle, and then Villano if he comes up or whatever. But you still got to have them linebackers who's going to have to go against them linemen and stop Ivory and the other linebacker they got. And that's what bothers me. Or if they run that option with Smith, or if Vic come in now.
Mm-hmm.
That's what's bothering me the most.
Okay.
Offensive-wise, it's going to be that line against Wilkerson and all of them because they're still suspect for right now, and I just think we'll squeak it out in the last 3 minutes of the ball game. That's what I think.
Okay.
Rain and all.
Okay.
And we're in off. That's what I think.
Okay.
Yes.
Well, that's not a bad lay of the land.
Yes, sir. All right, Judge, you have a good one.
23-16, says Eldridge in North Carolina. You got it. Let's get to some of the folks who took the time to email in here. Where's my email? Here we go. Howard in Stratford, Connecticut. WTF would have to be the battles in the trenches on both sides of the ball. What's the focus? In other words, battle in the trenches. I would agree, because I think that's the one spot, as when we talked to Rich Cimini from ESPN New York in the opening hour today, that's the one area that the Jets can exploit the Patriots tomorrow night. Their front four, their front seven, if you will, defensively against the Patriots' offensive line. If the Jets can put extraordinary pressure on Tom Brady and make it difficult for him to step up into the pocket or put some hits on him, when you know you got to be accurate, especially if it's windy and rainy out there, this is where the Jets can make it a ball game. I fully expect the Jets to, you know, here's the well-worn cliche, pin their ears back and come after TB12 tomorrow. Howard also says, Pat's D needs to stack the line, stuff the run, make Geno beat you or make mistakes, and then capitalize on those mistakes when he makes them. I'm 110% in agreement. Pat's O needs to figure out a way to run against one of the best run DLs in the league. I think if the Pats jump out to an early lead, combined with the weather, it'll demoralize the Jets, and they'll fold. Two things scare me about the game. Pat's O line versus the Jets' D line, TB12's ability to throw the ball in the forecasted weather. Howard is a brother from another mother today. I think the Pats win this one, but the weather keeps it low scoring. 21-10 is what he says for the Patriots. Good analysis, Howard. Really good. Jared from Canada. John, prediction Thursday on What's the Focus Wednesday. Gotta love it. Pats 17, Jets 13. Thank you, Jarrett. That's a little closer to what I'm thinking. I'll go ahead and give you mine because actually both Howard and Jarrett are kind of dancing right around my number. I've got the Jets with 13. The question is, how bad is the weather tomorrow night and how much does it limit what New England can do, especially with now question marks in the running game and Stephen Ridley's absence? I do think the Patriots will continue to load up, slow the Jets down on offense with the run game, stuffing it. I think I'd be surprised if we didn't see the heavy package defensively, you know, a 52 look for at least half of the snaps tomorrow, to where it minimizes the impact of linebacker depending on what Dante Hightower's situation is. But I think you'll see that. They will try to stop the run like they did against Buffalo, and that'll be the primary focus, and they'll try to make Geno beat them with his arm. And the weather, if it does turn out to be nasty, well, then the weather should certainly help the Patriots defensively and also trying to force turnovers. So I'm going to say that the Patriots defense is going to get a couple of those turnovers as long as they don't turn it over themselves. And that, of course, is the great X factor when you're talking weather on the field. You got to make sure that you don't turn it over yourself. Patriots can ill afford any self-inflicted wounds. And that also goes for the penalties, because I've ragged about the penalties over the last several weeks in nitpicks. Ragged about it again on the View From Above column here on Patriots.com this week as well, that comes out on Tuesdays if you've missed it. And to me, that's got to improve sooner rather than later. You cannot get into the middle part of the season and still be worried about, you know, false starts, not knowing the snap count and not hearing the calls and not focusing, not concentrating. That's rookie, you know, that's the kind of stuff that loses guys' jobs. These guys are paid too much money to pay attention to detail. That's got to start coming around. I realize there may not be much after them, so they got to play, but nevertheless, that's been my overwhelming nitpick, is they just don't seem to be paying attention to the little things as they should. If the Patriots can hold that to three or four penalties and no turnovers, the Jets are not going to win this game. I'm picking New England 23, Jets 13. And I'm going to say that the Patriots will manage to get a couple of turnovers, which will lead to maybe anywhere from 10 to 14 extra points. And that could end up being the difference in the game, much like it ended up being the difference in the game this past Sunday against Buffalo. Chad from the ATL says, John, I don't know where the focus is within the Patriots game plan, but I know where it needs to be. They need to focus on the players that make plays. Uh-oh, this is turning into a nitpick. Tim Wright caught a touchdown early in the game Sunday, and so did Brian Timms. And for some reason, that was the last time they took the field. Why did our game plan on Sunday involve removing playmakers and leaving in Amendola, who's becoming irrelevant? Just really gets my goat knowing how good Tim Wright can be and who we gave up to get him, and then limiting him to one play even though it was a touchdown. Who knows? He could have had more. The focus Sunday needs to be putting your best players on the field. Well said, Chad. Putting the best players on the field. I sense a rant for a future View From Above coming up, because that's something I've been trying to think of in the last couple of weeks myself, and I think you put it pretty well. So, Chad, if I decide to rant about that, you'll get the credit. Thank you, buddy. Let's see. Gabe says, Pats 31, Jets 16. John, real quick on What's the Focus Wednesday. With the weather going to be soup with winds 20 to 30 miles per hour, I see more of a run game needed here against the Jets. Bill and Josh need to be lapidary in taking these young runners and molding them into gems. Next man up. Oh, Lord. We're invoking Eric's word of the day. And, hey, since the weather is bad, why not use a gray and white in the backfield? Kind of apropos. That's good. Yeah, Jonas Gray, James White, like that. Well, my score again, keeping the Pats' edge and tempo rolling, 31-16. Good email, Gabe. Flint in Atlanta. What's the focus? Stop the run. Play mistake-free, turnovers and penalties. Take advantage of the Jets' inevitable turnovers. Bingo. As Troy Brown would say, I got bingo. Prediction? Brady's aggressive, varied, intermediate attack with Gronk, Wright, and Edelman. takes the fight to the Jets. Early lead. Pressure provides Jets turnovers. Jonas Gray closes with a little blunt force trauma. Pats 30, Jets 17. Thank you, Flint. Good, well-thought-out predictions here, gang. Here is Glenn in Ottawa who says Pats win it 26-13 is his pick. John in New Brunswick, Canada. Love listening to the playbook. My prediction for tomorrow night against the New Jersey Jets, Pats 24-13 for the Jets. And bye-bye Rex Ryan. Wow, do you think the Jets would fire him if they lose tomorrow night? Do you think they would pull the trigger after 7 weeks in the NFL season? I'd be a little surprised if that happened. I could understand it. I mean, obviously, you'd be 1-6 if you lose. I think that's an interesting sideline maybe or sidebar to tomorrow night's game. I wonder if John Idzik decides to stick with him a little longer to see if he can help develop Geno a bit, knowing that he's really going to be a lame duck. Daniel in San Antonio. John, if Rex gets fired, would the Pats ever consider hiring him for a defensive coordinator? Let's say Rex can't find a team to hire him. Would he and Bill ever work together? Well, first of all, you have a defensive coordinator, so you'd have to have an opening. Interesting. My first inclination is to say no, but, I also think that you never can say never. I know that's kind of dancing around your response that you wanted, Dan, but I don't know that that would happen right away. I think Rex would probably hold out still looking for a head coaching job first before he would consider coming to a place like New England as a coordinator. Steve in Killeen, Texas. John, the weather be damned. I remember TB12 playing in the snow and lighting it up when the Vikings' roof collapsed and they had to call the game. Pats 31, Jets 10. And to be honest with you, I believe Jets turnovers could even get the Pats to be a 40 burger. Woo! Call them for the 40 burger if they've got turnovers tomorrow night. Like it. And then Steve says, I'm not sure how valid the Urban Dictionary is as a source, but here are the definitions of piss-offedness. Remember we were talking about this yesterday as a word? Piss-offedness, the state of being pissed off with someone or something. Man, I'm experiencing some pretty intense feelings of piss-offedness today. Here's meaning number two, piss-offedness. Alternative adverb, used to describe the degree of anger of one person towards another. During a football game, for instance, Alex, dude, did you see that spaz yelling at the ref during the game? Derek, yeah, bro, he was showing some epic piss-offedness, not going to lie. Steve, that's pretty good. That's pretty good. You'll be here every week, right? Thank you very much. Jeff in Calgary. John, my prediction for tomorrow night, Patriots 26, Jets 19. That's a good one, too. That's a good pick. Combination of bad weather, Thursday night game, and divisional matchup makes me think it'll be an unusual score, maybe slightly closer than you'd normally think this game would be. Jeff in Calgary. You know, Jeff, I think you've also picked up on something else, too. Generally speaking, the scores have not been what you would call traditional scores, like the 24-17, which we heard a lot of earlier in the program, in fact, for this game. You know, last week's was the perfect example of that, 37-22. 22 is not one of the more natural scores that you really see every week. That's an unusual score. So, you know, you might get lucky because I think the 1 week that we did have winners last year and we gave away 5 media guides in 1 week, but those were the only media guides we gave away all year, is because we actually had one traditional score. To me, it's more fun trying to pick what the odd score might be. Max in San Diego. John, I predict Patriots 21, Jets 7. Revis scores a touchdown from Brady, and New England sends Rex Rodent and the New York Jokes home. Revis scores a touchdown from Brady? How's he going to do that? Is he going to line up on offense? That'd almost be worth the price of admission, wouldn't it? Think it might. All right, let's see what we got on Twitter today. Twitter, Chanel says, 21-9, hashtag Jets suck. I say Geno forgets Revis is no longer a Jet and just throws him the ball. I like that. That's good. It's good, Chanel. 21-9. I like the way you're thinking on the score, too. This one comes from the gray t-shirt. He says, Patriots 20, Jets 10 on hashtag Prediction Thursday. Big Matt, hashtag WTF Wednesday was really WTF where the bleep was John. Ha ha. Yeah, we got a late start today. Prediction Thursday, 27-10, Patriots, Gronk dominates. Michael says, John, Michael from Kansas City, my prediction for tomorrow's game, Pats 41, Jets 23. Okay. I think I had one or two more. Did I have any more on Facebook, on Twitter? Doesn't look like it. All right, you can keep them coming on Twitter. Doesn't look like it. Oh, Chad just tweeted out 38-7, Pats. Wow, 38-7. So he's got a route tomorrow. All right, let's see what we got on Facebook today. Herman says, John, my prediction for tomorrow night, it'll be a tight game at 17-17 going into the fourth quarter. Brady drive, the offense down the field, throws a touchdown to Gronk. Jets get the ball. Geno throws a pick to Revis, ends the game 24-17. Pats win. So we've had that one as a common thread number today. Mary Beth, thinking a messy game with the rain, 17-6, Pats. 17-6. Okay. Kareem, 48-20, Pats. Let's go, Pats. That's what I have for predictions. Now, as far as WTF would be, I'd say the running game. We've got to get to a 200 rushing yard between Gray and Bolden. That would really be promising for the rest of the season. No doubt, Kareem. We wouldn't have any worries at all if you were able to get that out of those guys. Against that Jets front seven, that would be a stunner. That would be a stunner. Christian says, John, my prediction for tomorrow, Pats 34, Jets 13. It's hard to take the Jets serious right now. And Marcus says, John, this game will be a blowout. Jim Schwartz defenses have – oh, that's last week. Oh, there he goes. He just sent this week's. Pats 34, Jets 14. 34-14. Okay, good. Also on Facebook. Hang on a second. Come back to me. Here it comes. Christopher on hashtag Prediction Thursday, 31-13 Patriots. That's Chris from Maine sends that one. 31-13 is his pick. Tolga says, John, 12 will be Tom Brady and the Pats, 41, Jets, 9. 41-9 is what he says will be the score tomorrow. Lewis predicts, John, with the Pats playing better and the O-line getting it together, Patriots win 35-14. We got a lot of big scores here. I'm really kind of surprised. I don't know if it's just from the enthusiasm created over having two pretty solid offensive performances in a row, or people are just feeling a little bit better about the Patriots because they've been able to whip up on, what we think was a pretty decent Cincinnati team, and what we saw was it's still a pretty decent Buffalo team. I don't know. I don't know that I see a 14-21 point route on hand, whether or not tomorrow night, because the Jets always have something, up their sleeve with the Patriots. Usually weather conditions indicate a little bit more of a conservative approach, and usually tends to be a little bit more of a field evening type of scenario, just based on past history, I suppose. Onique, John, I'll be at the game tomorrow. It'll be a wet one, hoping the Jets lay another egg against the Pats, and Brady has another good day despite the weather. He says Pats 27, Jets 10. Nori posts, well, I didn't get to post yesterday during the day, but listen to the podcast at night. I just have one nitpick, Wright getting more targets. That has also been shared here today. I can see he has a lot of upside. He's a good complement to Gronk when they're in two tight end sets. Of course, the game plan may have had something to do with other guys getting involved. Prediction, Pats 20, Jets 13. Grindout game will be expected in an expected rainy Thursday night in Foxborough. Third down conversion percentages for both teams will be below 50. I'd take 40 right now. Will not be surprised if this turns out to be an ugly win, but any win is better than any loss. Correct you are. Adam on Facebook says, hashtag prediction Thursday, back-to-back seasons where the Jets travel to Foxborough early in the season to play on Thursday night football. And once again, they're bringing that dark cloud that consistently hovers over that team, rain included, with them. I think the result will be the same as well. Patriots win 24-16. couple of others here. Ramon for Nuke It Wednesday, or he says Rook It Wednesday. I have my prediction for this coming Thursday. A close game. Jets have lost a bunch, but they are dangerous. Their pride is hurt against a divisional rival. They will fight to the end. Patriots 27, Jets 24. I think that's a pretty good one, Ramon. And I think you're right. The Jets, they've really gone beyond, I think, having their backs to the wall. This may not even be as much of a season saver as it might be a Rex Ryan saver. You know, they win their season opener, then they lose five in a row, and tomorrow night would be six losses in a row. And at 1-6 on the season, they got no hope. They're not doing anything for the rest of the year. Be interesting to see how they come out and respond, especially if the Patriots get up early. Williams says, my prediction, Vic has a rushing and passing TD as he outduels Jimmy Garoppolo in junk time. He says, Patriots 54, Jets 14. Okay. Wow. significant. That's significant. All right. Two more, actually, off Twitter. Adam comes through with the 21-10 for the Pats on hashtag Prediction Thursday. And let's not forget hashtag WTF Wednesday. And then Simon says 31-7 for the Patriots, 31-7 for the Pats over the Jets. Interesting. All right, I had 23-13. I do think that the weather will tend to keep the score down slightly. It will be all about turnovers and whether or not the Patriots can take advantage by forcing the Jets into turnovers and keeping the ball themselves. They cannot turn the ball over against the Jets because if you're going to make it easy on New York, they are capable, especially with the run game. And if they get up early, then you're going to see them really try to control it and keep the ball out of the Patriots' hands without a doubt in my mind, because the Patriots really can't do a lot about scoring if they don't have the football. So I'm a proponent now, especially with the way this team has taken such a hard time to get on a roll. I'm a proponent of taking the football if you win the toss. Instead, the Patriots traditionally love to defer to the second half. I like getting the jump on people, especially when you're on the road. And I realize that the Pats are at home tomorrow night, but I still like getting the jump on people. I don't know if they choose to do that tomorrow night, but if you get the jump on a team like New York, you could get them down by, you know, two scores. They're going to start throwing the football, and I think they're going to start pitching it around, and goodness only knows what you're going to get out of that. Certainly Jets fans don't even know that. Bob Sosie's coming up very shortly here with his program today. What's up, kid?
Hey, John. How are you?
What's coming up?
Oh, we've got former Patriot running back Tony Collins, who set the record for most rushing yards in a game against the New York Jets in 1983, and, of course, has had a long and difficult road through his post-football life. He spends a lot of time speaking to young kids in particular about some of the issues he's faced and battled past, and we're going to talk with him a bit later on. Ian Eagle, the voice of CBS Sports in Westwood One, will be calling the radio broadcast nationally with Boomer Esiason. He's going to join us. Boomer also handles the preseason telecast for the New York Jets.
Boomer does everything.
He does everything. Ian is the best in the business, as far as I'm concerned.
He's very good. I watched Boomer last night on Showtime, too, he just does
absolutely
everything.
So we'll talk with Ian Eagle and get his insights about tomorrow night's game. In addition, Scott Zolak scheduled to join us. Casey Walker, the young Patriot defensive tackle they picked up from the Carolina Panthers as well.
Good.
So we got a pretty full lineup.
Good. And he's liable to see a good bit of time tomorrow night if they go heavy on the defensive front trying to slow down a Jets running game.
I would think so, and I think that's the MO for the Jets tomorrow night.
Yeah.
Try to ground and pound as New York used to try to do with Rex Ryan. It's been surprising to see how little commitment they've made to the run with Johnson and Ivory, maybe circumstances involving score and falling behind in a hurry in the last couple of games and contributed to that. But it is a bit surprising not to see the Jets running the ball more frequently or even with more success. Their offensive line, not what it used to be.
That's right. They are struggling a bit too. But I still think that's playing to their strength, or what their strength is right now, is trying to run the football, and it's going to be up to New England to stop them.
Yeah, their secondary is a weakness. And as you mentioned, John, the best way to play defense against the Patriots may be to keep the Patriots' offense off the field.
Off the field. I fully expect that. All right, coming up momentarily, thanks to Rich Cimini from ESPN New York. Thanks to Russell Baxter. Thanks to Kevin Collins on the short week for getting it done. Game time tomorrow night, kickoff at 8:25 Eastern right here at Gillette Stadium. Of course, the pregame social will be here at 6 p.m. Eastern tomorrow night for those of you that like to tune into our online, our web radio pregame show. So it will be here on at that time. And then we'll be back to the regular schedule, same Pats time, same Pats channel for Nitpick Tuesday next Tuesday. Have a great time with the game, everybody. Bob's coming up next.
Tuesday through Thursday, hear from NFL experts on Patriots Playbook.
I'm pleased to be joined on the program now by Jim Nance from CBS Sports, the senior editor for NFL.com. Vic Carucci, welcome onto the program. Ron Jaworski, Phil Simms from CBS, joining us here inside the Playbook. Kenny Albert, who of course calls the play-by-play for the Fox Television Network.
All right, we're pleased to be joined now by Dan Dierdorf, CBS analyst.
Randy Cross joins us here inside the Playbook.
Patriots Playbook with John Rook, Tuesday through Thursday at 2. Yeah.